Hi, everyone, and welcome to our very first episode of our digital dialogue series, where Adrienne Lickers-Xavier and I talk a little bit about where Rare started, where we come from, how we got to the idea of a podcast series, and who we're a little bit about the kinds of topics we're going to be speaking about, issues around land, our relationships to land and food sovereignty, Indigenous land rematriation, and relational accountability. And so throughout this series, you're going to hear us speaking with and learning from many different thinkers, writers, food activists, land defenders, and we're really looking forward to sharing in this work and learning together. So I hope you enjoy the opening episode.
I'm not sure how I want to introduce myself, but I suppose I should do it the way that I usually do when I'm out in the public, which is, you know, I'm Adrienne Lickers-Xavier. I am currently the acting director of the Indigenous Studies program at McMaster University. Only I'm about to step back in time, and I'm going to step like quite a ways back to when I didn't even think I was ever going to be an academic. Didn't think that I was part of the food system, didn't think that food security and sovereignty past my own backyard were ever going to be something that I was advocating for, researching about, participating in. It was just something that I was doing. However, I'm going to introduce you to the person who actually let the cat out of the bag in like 2014. Because, Sarah walked up to me and said, hey, I heard you speak today, and that was really interesting, and I would love to talk more about that, because I'm interested in, like, the food system and Indigenous land, and, yeah, we should do it. And I was like, oh, I didn't think people would notice anything about what I was doing, despite the fact that I was speaking to a public audience in like Nova Scotia at the time, and I'm from Southern Ontario. So it was a bit of a stretch, but we've come a long, long way since then. And I'm gonna let Sarah introduce herself.
And I think that was at a Food Secure Canada conference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that talk really well. So my name's Sarah Rotz. I am now at York University in the Faculty of Environmental and Urban Change. So I did my disciplinary work is as a geographer officially, but a lot of my work is just really interdisciplinary sort of spans across issues of food justice, land, equity, climate change, and all that sort of stuff. But I think when I started to get engaged in food work, which really started in my PhD, because before that, I was really interested in issues of environmental and climate justice. I didn't really have a sense either about how food was related to environmental issues. And I was really interested in working on and contributing to positive environmental change and that sort of thing, and issues of social justice. But it really, again, it really wasn't until I actually did some traveling and just, I think just did some reading and reflection on the relationship of around land and food to that. And then once I started to, you know, go actually get into academia again, which I wasn't in academia at all. I was doing a lot of like community-based organizing kind of stuff, a lot of stuff around Occupy, a lot of stuff around social and environmental justice and stuff like that. And then I started to make these connections around food and access to food, food sovereignty as this really key component to our livelihood and to our ability to not only take care of ourselves and one another, but to be able to take care of and be with the land in a different way. So yes, I started to get involved in spaces like Food Secure Canada and stuff like that. And that's where I saw Adrienne speak. And when I saw that conversation, when I heard and started to read the work of folks like, I think James Dashuk was on that panel as well, and started to get a better sense of the relationship between land, colonialism, racism, and food, I think that really shifted my understanding of these issues more broadly, like environmental justice and things like that. So that's sort of how I came into it. And then when I met Adrienne, I was like, I really want to get to know this person. I just thought that your talk was so not just compelling, but I think what I really enjoyed about you and listening to you was the way in which you were able to connect it to your life. And I just found you to be really down to earth. And I was like, I really want to learn from this person. So I did. I just came up to Adrienne and was like, hey, can we talk? I just want to talk to you.
And you weren't shy about it, which I thought was great, because when I did that talk, it had been as a favor to a friend who was invited to speak there, because one of the other people on the panel was Larry McDermott from Plenty Canada. And he had been traveling the world with my friend Ione Anderson, who's passed on now, and they had spent a good majority of their lives just talking to people about food and their relationship to growing food and being in the food system. And like I said, at the time, I didn't know I was part of the food system. I would never have labeled it that. I was running a food sovereignty and security program at Six Nations, and I still didn't consider myself part of that. I just thought that we were modeling what sustainable homes could look like for our community. And that was the goal, because I had grown up with that. My mom grew food for us. My mom went on to teach the classes that we had. But that panel opened the door for me to say, I guess I have a relationship to land. And not so much that I was unaware of that, but I was unaware that that mattered to people that other people didn't. That was the real crux of it for me, was that when it came right down to it, it's not a question of whether I have a connection. It's whether I have that knowledge. It's that some people are seeking that connection. Others are unaware that that connection does exist, or they are so accustomed and attuned to it that they think that everyone has it or that no one else has it. And there are these whole conversations around that go on, which kind of brings us forward a little bit in time to where we actually turned this strange, you know, epiphany moment where Sarah was like, I would like to talk to this person. My ability to be relatable and down to earth for me. And I remember that day specifically because someone said, you know, how do I get involved? I have an apple orchard and I want to be able to help the people near me. And I was just like, this is a trick, right? Because as far as I'm concerned, being a nice person and making friends, it's not rocket science. It's actually just like neighborly. And maybe that's where I came from, because despite the realities of colonialism and racism, human to human relationships still are the way that we change that. The way that history gets modified into the future is by us making relationships, by Sarah walking up to me and saying, hey, I want to talk to you, and me being like, oh, a stranger danger, but okay, I'll try it. So when I answered the most like poignant of how do I get involved, which is very often in food conversations and land conversations, how do I get involved? I said the same thing that I continue to say, you know, 7 years later. Make friends with people, be kind, say yes to meeting someone new, which for me is really strange. And that's how we got, well, truthfully, that's how we got to the Rare Collective today. Sarah, if you want to tell us a little bit about the collective itself, or maybe even what rare means, not just that we're, you know, unique and cool.
Yeah, we, it's true. We actually did form through relationships, through making connections, making friendships together. And so I think initially so relational accountability for Indigenous rematriation, we started to, Adrienne and I first started to have conversations with Lauren about really trying to move forward with a project where we come together as Indigenous and settler academics, community-based organizers, not just academics, right? I think that was pretty clear from the beginning that we wanted to broaden this conversation to be able to build a common vision for food sovereignty from an anti-colonial perspective, from a feminist perspective, where we're centering Indigenous women, LGBTQ2S folks. But from the beginning, it was really about, okay, how do we even get to those conversations together? Well, it's about building trust, and it's about coming together to start to actually practice that. And that's where this idea of relational accountability started to form together. And so we came together with Lauren Kepkowitz, and then started to have really initial conversations with a few people at the National Farmers Union, because we knew that this, we wanted eventually, once we started to build that trust, to somehow, and we weren't quite sure how, but to bring this into broader food and agriculture and farming communities. And so we connected with Ayla Fenton and Taryn Giacomini with the National Farmers Union and the Indigenous Solidarity Working Group. And then we also connected with Danielle Boissonneau, who does amazing work around food justice and Indigenous food sovereignty. And we started to build those conversations. And so I think that's where and then we kind of actually came together physically in person in Hamilton in 2019, was it? And came together around a plate of nachos. And that's where the conversation started.
It was all literally history after that, because we became the nachos methodology. And I don't know if we knew it at the time, but it was definitely one of those things where we all got together, and it's true of so many layers of the world, much like layers of nachos, that there was something we could all agree upon. And food brings people together. Frankly, nachos brings people together. There's a reason why it's at every single restaurant, cafe, bar situation. There's always that one plate that everybody's like, yeah, we can all share that. And we didn't do it on purpose, but then there were all those great jokes, because this is literally like dish with one spoon territory, where there's one dish, one spoon, everybody shares, there's a responsibility to it. And of course, then we all stuck our mitts in and we all shared nachos, and it goes for everybody. We can talk about how in the academic realm, or for me, the nerdy observer realm, that nachos are something that are unifying, in the sense that everybody agreed to them, that we all wanted to be part of it. We were all ingredients in that plate. We have a common ground, literally land and ground. We were in the same space at the same time. We understand that not every person likes all of the same things, but we all had a role to play in it. And it has come back to be the unifying conversation every single time. We're like, it's like nachos. We've met over the years in person a couple of times, and each time that inevitably that's the dish that comes together. And it has become our, I would say joke, but it's not, because we're very serious about our nachos methodology. We believe in the synchronicity of working well together, much like a plate of nachos is this perfect dance of items that go together. Like planting the perfect garden goes together, like making the perfect plate of nachos, like the perfect recipe has all of the right ingredients. Much like that for us, the collective is also that way. we have the ability as a collective to have a voice that is both unified and also still singular. We each have a different role to play. We all are our own ingredients on this platter of nachos. We have a different perspective. We come from different places, but together we have a committed vision and a space that tells the world what we think. And we want more people to know about it. So we want to share our nachos.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add too, I think one of the big pieces that we spoke in a lot of depth about at the beginning was the relationship between each of our, why we're here, like why this work matters to us individually as human beings, and then our understanding of our own positionality and sort of where sort of socially we and politically we actually sort of come into this work. And I think that trying to make that a practice together and trying to make that really clear, that real clear sense of where our positionality is and then where our sort of ethical compass lies has been something I think that we've really been trying to practice, that putting that sort of that work of solidarity work and positionality into practice as a research collective has been pretty core, I think, to a lot of our conversations.
One of the things that I have noticed a lot, and I say it often, I've noticed, and especially over the last couple of years since COVID really stopped us from gathering, and it's not the same to have a plate of nachos by yourself, even if you're on Zoom with other people doing it, is that it was important to me to be mindful of the fact that our collective, while there is that relational accountability, there is also that relationship accountability, that we have a placement, we have our own positionality, but that's part of this project. Our placement, our understanding of self, our understanding of relationship to each other had to come, we thought at first that it had to come first, but the interesting part is that it didn't. We, much like this conversation, you're getting two of the collective members, and as this podcast series proceeds, you will meet more of us, not necessarily all together, because that's like a wild party, having us all in a room together and sharing ideas and getting excited and talking, you know, over and under each other. But you will meet us all at some stage through this process, in the interviews, on the screen, individually. We have come to understand, I think, or at least I have through this, that part of this process is about us being in it and learning together. I have a pretty strong understanding of who I am and where I come from, but I have to remember that when I'm in this group, not everybody knows that. I remind myself often that I need to admit, and I say admit because I never thought about it this way, that I have a very fortunate childhood to have been so closely connected to my food system, the land that I lived on, and my relationship to it, with my mom growing almost everything that I ate for the first 10 years of my life, at least. Mm-hmm. It changed my perception of the world and of land and food. So my approach to food and this conversation is really particular, and not many people have that same connection that I genuinely took for granted, I think, at first. And so we are all mindful of our placement in this, not just to the larger questions, not to just, you know, the other people that you're going to get to see through this podcast series, but to each other. And it's taken a long time for me to be mindful of that. And sometimes I have to tell people again, I'm going to ask these questions, or I'm going to talk to you, but please remember, this is my history, and this is why I feel so close to this, and sometimes why I gloss over my connection to those pieces, because to me, they're integral and they're permanent. And not everyone is in that space. It works on all sides. So my position is very clear. But by sharing mine, others are welcome and able to share their origin stories, their positionality. our relationship, and that's what helps to make it grow. So in that respect, I think it's been a big piece of this, but I'm excited for all of you to hear more about it and to get to meet us all.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and I do remember having pieces of those conversations at the very beginning and feeling really grateful to be able to hear your story and the story of the other folks in the room. Because for me, I have white settler ancestry that I don't have a strong connection to. On one side, I have a lot of Acadian ancestry, and then on the other, German, British, Irish, but linkages to, and I don't have a strong understanding of that sort of long-standing history. And from my understanding, there wasn't a lot of land holding or farming or agriculture in my family's history. A lot of it was a lot of factory work and things like that. And then I also grew up in a culture that was so disconnected from land and food. It wasn't something that my family practiced. Barely gardening, but I would call it more so like landscaping. But that's actually what has drawn me to this work, because that actually made me feel a deep sense of sadness with the way that mentality. That's something I've actually been trying to pay attention to and change and build, because that's not something that brings me joy. I think what brings me joy is actually building a connection to the earth or the space that I'm in or whatever. And so I think trying to actually shift that, this collective and our work together has really actually helped me to nurture that and to build that and to think about it in all sorts of new ways. So, and then there's all those sort of political questions of, you know, land and obligation. But I think responsibility and accountability with ourselves and with each other as a collective has been such a key and important piece in our conversations. And I guess we'll hear more about that as we move ahead in this podcast series. But I guess to sort of close things out, maybe we want to talk a little bit about why we chose a podcast and who we're going to be interviewing, because it really did come out of COVID, right? It really came out of, originally a lot of these conversations, a lot of this work was planned to be on the land, was going to be land-based encounters, research, activities with a lot of the folks that we end up speaking with. But because of COVID, we thought, why don't we have these conversations and build this learning virtually and then see where this takes us together and start to learn together and start to build an understanding together of these concepts, right? Of rematriation, of Indigenous food sovereignty, land back, all this kind of stuff, relational accountability, and then see where it takes us.
And I think the biggest piece of that for me is that there's two things. When I think about relational accountability, there is that piece where I have a deep-seated responsibility to share knowledge. I don't want to have it and hold it. I want to have it and share it. So when the opportunity, and I'm phrasing it as an opportunity, when the opportunity to create these conversations digitally versus in person, where absolutely relationships would be nurtured, fostered, and really grow between people, I think this gives us the opportunity to actually open the door to a huge audience. There are more people who can build this relationship with us, with themselves and with land, by walking through this journey with us virtually. Because at the end of it, the idea of rematriation is just that, it's that coming back. And I think about it for myself as, if we return to Mother Earth, then rematriation is about us reconnecting to her. So through this process, I think we're going to be able to get to meet some wonderful and fantastic people, and we're going to have some great conversations, but we're also going to be able to take those insights and listen to those moments and do our own reconnecting, because this mm-hmm. has given us a great space. Unfortunately, due to COVID, it is virtual, but fortunately due to COVID, it is also an opportunity for us to do this in a space that is everywhere. You can listen to this and connect anywhere. I grew up on the West Coast and I connect strongly with lodgepole pines and Douglas fir trees and the Pacific Ocean. And I live in Southern Ontario now, so I do that in Carolinian forests and small lakes and the Grand River. And I could do both of those things with this podcast anywhere. So to me, this is a true opportunity for us to share what turned out to be a diverse group of people across a huge portion of North America, because we're not all together. And that isn't even due to COVID. That's just how life has turned out. But we can participate in this podcast. We can meet with people in Nova Scotia. We can chat with people here in Ontario. We can chat with people in Alberta, and we get to feel close. And then we can do that on the land too. And when the time comes, we will get to do this in person. And maybe by the time the end of the series comes about, or this particular chapter of the series, maybe we will actually be in person and you'll get to see us in a group, and it'll be wild and hard to follow, but it'll be great. And I'll feel bad for the tech person, but not that bad.
That would be nice. That would be really nice. If we can pull that off, that would be amazing. Well, I guess that sort of ties things up in terms of what our intentions are for this podcast. So in the next couple of episodes, you're going to hear from Adrian and I, and then other members of the collective as we move ahead. But we're going to be speaking with some amazing folks, some amazing thinkers, academics, farmers, food activists, land defenders, and the goal is really to just engage in a learning process together, to have a dialogue together, to build our understanding, our ability to think through these issues and feel through these issues as well, which is something that we talk a lot about in the collective, right? It's not just about intellectualizing this stuff. It's also about, how does this relate to our heart, and how does this relate to our lives and our relationships?
Always with the relationships. All I can say is, and I'm excited for this to happen, and I'm excited for you to be listening, but welcome to the collective.
Yes, welcome, welcome. Okay, well, I think we'll leave it at that. Anything else you want to add, Adrian?
Good luck to Jaren.
Okay, well, see everybody or hear everybody soon. Bye.